Okay, so moving on to agenda paper 5. Checking the recommendation to make it, which is a paper where the staff does recommend some standards.
There's even two papers
before
to come.
Before I misspoke. Agenda paper 5. So, Craig, your turn again.
Yes, thank you. So, in September, the committee discussed feedback on its tentative agenda decision about how to interpret unavoidable costs. Paragraph 68 of 537, assessing whether a contract is onerous. The committee decided to research possible narrow scope standard setting aimed at addressing this issue. So in this paper, we discuss, one, the range of contracts to which any new requirements should apply. Two, whether to include measurement of onerous contract liabilities or the economic benefits an entity considers when assessing whether a contract is onerous. And three, the form of any possible standard setting. So the paper goes in throughout the and goes in order. So first of all, to discuss the first one, two respondents to the tentative agenda decision suggested restricting the scope of any new requirements to contracts within the scope of IFRS 15. So we analysed the suggestion in paragraphs 19 to 29 of our paper. We recommend that if the committee decides to add a project to its standard setting agenda, any new requirements should apply to all onerous contracts within the scope of IS 37, not only contracts within the scope of IFRS 15. And this could be achieved by amending or interpreting the requirements in IS 37. So question one for the committee is on page 10 of the paper. So does the committee agree with the staff recommendation?
Project and the scope of it, is that what you want to touch on first?
No. Just saying that if we were to add a standard setting project, do you agree that the scope of that would apply to all onerous contracts as opposed to only those that are within the scope of IFRS 15?
So who put the cards up first? So John?
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not in favour of just doing standard setting for a subcategory of onerous contracts. The board decided in IFRS 15 not to write specific requirements on onerous revenue contracts, so I think it should be all onerous contracts.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree also with the proposal of the staff.
Okay, thanks. Tony?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's if we're looking for what the principle in IS 37 requires, then I think we need to look at all onerous contracts, not just those that come out of IFRS 15.
Okay, thank you. Bruce?
Should be done. Sorry, I'm in the same boat. We have to do it.
Thank you. Bonnie?
I also agree for the reasons listed in paragraph 29, I think, of the paper. I just maybe one comment that there are areas where 606 and IFRS 15 diverge. Shipping and handling costs is one of them. So I agree with the concept here, but just be aware there are differences.
Young Sue? Sorry, we can't hear you.
Sorry for that. Everybody agrees with the staff conclusion, but my thought is a little bit different. I think we have to wait a little bit before we define why we need to report on those contracts. And when the reporting of onerous contract is providing useful information. I just looked at IAS 11 and IAS 37 for onerous contract. But there's some rules about it, but none of the standards explaining why we need to report onerous contract at all. Which means that we don't know why we need to report onerous contract. I think we can find out some simple thought, like the objective of reporting onerous contract is to report losses, future losses, as soon as possible. Maybe then the solution is easy. Full costing would be the right answer for that. But full costing is a kind of conservative reporting. It has a conservative nature. And I'm not sure whether conservative nature is appropriate for all situations. So, for example, you know, the conservative reporting would be appropriate for some risky businesses like construction, or for some unreliable, less reliable revenue recognition like the percentage of completion method. But for some other areas like less risky or more sound or proper revenue recognition, maybe we don't have to take a conservative approach at all. So I agree that, you know, by the principle, you know, we can extend our scope to IAS 37. So, you know, so I kind of agree with that, but before we decide it, I want to think about why we need onerous contract and why we have to do it in what situation.
Okay. Thank you. So shall we vote on question one? So on page 10, whether you agree with the recommendation to add a project to the standard setting agenda focusing on all onerous contracts within the scope of 37. That's everybody except Young Su.
Yes, so 13.
So the second section discusses the measurement of onerous contract liabilities, where one respondent suggested that the committee should consider addressing the measurement of onerous contracts. And we consider the merits of the suggestion in paragraphs 36 to 43 of our paper. And we think that the potential disadvantages of addressing measurements outweigh any potential benefits from clarifying it. Therefore, question two for the committee is on page 12. Again, does the committee agree with the staff recommendation?
Any comments?
And I like your suggestion in paragraph 35 to add a simple statement to the effect that you measure owners' contracts in the same way that you recognize them. But I think it's a significant area of diversity. And I know, I know that risks opening up the project and debates about measurement in IAS 37, but I think if it's left open that the measurement could be the general requirements of IAS 37, because I think today there's diversity in practice. I think probably the majority of practice I see people measure owners' contract provisions at the way that they recognise them, in other words, the unavoidable costs versus the economic benefits, and they book that difference as their owners' contract provision. But when we discussed this previously in the committee, we said all the measurement requirements of IAS 37 apply. We didn't say that was how you measure the owner's contract provision. So I do think there's going to be significant diversity in measurement. So I'm probably with some hesitation saying it would be good to be able to also incorporate something about measurement into the scope of the project. But I'll sort of put that out there. I could be easily persuaded that's not a good idea as well.
That's a very honest job. Reinhardt?
Although I acknowledge the point that John makes, I just worry about the fact that if we added measurement to the project, we'll get bogged down, because I think that was one of the areas that the board tried to address previously, and it became a big issue. And I think, as John said, in practice, although there's differences in methods to determine what's an owner's contract or not, most people tend to measure it the way they determine or identify the owner's contract. So I think we will go a long way by dealing with the specific issue that, as the staff suggests, and if measurement becomes a significant issue, we can always deal with it. I'm not entirely convinced that that will be a significant issue, and as I said, I just worry about getting the project being derailed if we try to deal with that up front.
Okay, thank you. Tony.
Yeah, I think I share Reinhardt's concern. I think the evidence of trying to address IAS 37's measurement requirements has a somewhat checkered history. And so I think we have a very narrow question that we can pick off here. I think the risks of trying to get into measurement under IAS 37 probably outweigh the potential benefits. So I think I'd be inclined to limit it the way the staff suggest.
It's an onerous decision. Okay, Andrew.
I'm in a very similar place. I can think back to the history of IS 37, and any time anyone goes through...
Joan at the table, so it's... In case you forgot.
I know. But it's in practical terms, a very difficult one, because when work has been started on the measurement side of 37, it's always found to be a more complex area than people thought, because it's necessarily very, very difficult. And so, consistent with others, I think I would be looking at this and saying, if we can do something narrow to help deal with the question we've been asked, then let's do that. But I wouldn't want to go very widely on it, because I suspect we might be here in quite a long time still talking about it.
Bob?
I'm accepting of the staff proposal, but in being honest, I'm going to, as we go through this, be tempted to peek ahead and always, you know, look at the full model and measurement and on the next issue, benefits, and probably more on the benefits than on the measurement, because I've realized all the problems in the past on measurement. So very happy going down the path of let's try to keep this narrow and let's deal with this, but just understanding that we may at some times want to diverge into or feel like we need to address some of those other issues.
A warning. Okay, Bertrand.
I agree with the staff's proposal. For sure, measurement, it will be just a nightmare to deal with it in reasonable time. I'm okay with the staff proposal.
Okay, Jim.
I totally agree with John's comment, and I copy every word of his, and I could agree with this the staff conclusion, but there's still, I think, thinking about the other side of the issue has some value. So totally agree with John.
All right, so question two, show of hands, please, for who recommends with the, who supports the staff recommendation that the scope of the project be restricted to clarifying the requirements around identification?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Okay.
So in paragraphs 44 to 50 of our paper, we analyse whether the committee should clarify the meaning of economic benefits in the definition of performance contracts in IS 37. For the reasons noted in paragraph 49 of the paper, we recommend that if the committee decides to add a project to its standard setting agenda, the scope should clarify only the term unavoidable costs in the IS 37 definition of an onerous contract. In other words, the scope should not include clarifying the meaning of the phrase economic benefits expected to be received. This is the third question for the committee on page 14 of the paper.
Any comments? Bruce?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to listen to everybody said, and that's why I didn't necessarily agree with the one before. I mean, I think that I always worry about trying to clarify the one side of an equation. I accept that there's some challenges in terms of it, but I think that if we're going to clarify the one side of it here on the costs, I think you've got to, what is the other side? Because that's where we've got challenges. And I'm kind of in that half position a bit, like John was in the previous one, saying, look, I can be convinced to support it without, but I just think we're going to get a lot of people asking that question, saying, you're clarifying the one side, guys, you might as well clarify the other side, at least I know what I'm comparing apples with.
When I did some outreach in my home country, I received rather negative feedback on this proposal. So just to let you know that this one was not well perceived.
So that would
same comments as Bruce has just mentioned. Just dealing with one side and not the other one. Maybe you could explain. I understand the fact that it could be. It could go too far, but you could provide us a bit of flavor on why exactly you do not want to enter into this dealing with the economic benefit side of.
I'll go at saying some of the problems. One reason why you might not have to, and one is that the types of contracts that give questions about unavoidable costs are different from the types of contracts that give questions about economic benefits. So you maybe don't need to actually always look at both sides because you'd be dealing with different issues. And then on the economic benefit side, it is a minefield. And in particular, it's, for example, the sort of question that kind of arises, can you look beyond the existing contract for the other benefits? And the risks there are that we possibly have different approaches and different standards at the moment, and and maybe one approach is viewed as being good for one particular type of contract and another approach for another type of contract. So for the fact that we've got different approaches and different standards isn't a problem. But then you have a bucket standard like IAS 37, which is dealing with all sorts of different contracts, and it can become very difficult to pin down what is the right answer in IAS 37. And there's two thoughts that you possibly don't have to, because the two sides doesn't rub up too much anyway. And the other one is that it really could become quite a big deal.
So if I understand, Joan, it's kind of a unit of account question in a sense on the benefit side. Sometimes whether you almost might break a contract maybe down into more than one thing, or whether you can bundle
there's,
looking
there's
at this contract.
There's unit of accounts. It's whether there's lots of unit of account questions, whether you split contracts or whether you even look outside the contracts, beyond contracts totally. So, yeah.
I agree with Bruce's comments that it's very unfortunate just to have one side, and I think that we have that in other examples earlier, and then you get questions just after. And if we do all this work and efforts, costs, etc., to make a standard change, and then a little bit later has to do another change, that is not good. So I think we should address the benefit side as well.
I'd like to echo the same comments, and additionally, I'm even more concerned after our comments about the economic benefit. You know, we should do something.
So Joan convinced you in the other direction.
Well, I'm even more concerned now.
Joan. Okay, Bonnie.
My comments echo what others have raised, that I think we have to address both sides in addressing the recognition.
Martin.
Yeah, I might understand that on the one hand you have the cash flows out of a contract, whereas on the other hand you have the cash flows out of a bundle, which is more than the contract. So what is the unit you have to account for, and are economic benefits only measured cash flow-wise, or could you also measure economic benefits in other terms, like renome or whatever? I see the challenge with regard to that, because you have to go across through all standards. But at least as a starting point, probably one should try to discuss where for sure we are out of economic benefits. So one thing is to define where we are in. What are economic benefits? And on the other hand, we could say what she clearly is out of that area. This could be an approach we might use.
Young Soo?
Yeah, I just want to concur with everybody else. I don't think we can define cost without considering benefit at all.
Okay, John.
Well, unlike the previous question, I would not go near economic benefits. I think it would be easier to deal with measurement than actually deal with economic benefits, to be frank. So I wouldn't go anywhere close to it. And I think you can do standard setting which looks at costs. I don't think you have to do all of the aspects of recognition to provide clarity on one of the elements that's important to recognition. But I certainly wouldn't touch economic benefits. I think you'd be here for a long, long time.
My comments are consistent with John's, and just to add to that, I think when I look at where this issue arose, it's because of the interplay between IS 11 and 18 which doesn't exist under IFRS 15, and IFRS 15 is upon us. So I just worry. I guess I don't foresee that the economic benefit side would be a significant issue in the context of IFRS 15. And so I think the existing diversity that exists won't be exacerbated by IFRS 15. And so my strong preference would be to leave that at this point in time. I like John, think it's probably a bigger minefield than measurement.
Okay. Thank you. Jim.
I struggle with this for quite a while, and as someone just mentioned, you can't just solve one side of the puzzle or the equation and without mentioning the other. But after hearing John's explanation and also John, others, the difficulties and the complexity could delay or just ruin the whole process. So I am okay with the staff's recommendation for now.
Tony?
Very similar, I support the staff's recommendation. I think IFRS 15 is obviously just around the corner, and in the interest of trying to be helpful, I think we need to get something done as quickly as we can. And I think history suggests we'll be here quite a long time if we try and fix the economic benefits question. So I would rather be surgical and fix the thing that I think we can fix and not address the question that history suggests we will struggle to fix.
Yep. Andrew.
Very similar comments. And again, I go back to what was the source of this paper and the issue that we're discussing, and it was around what are the costs that you include when you're doing an onerous contract assessment. And as others have said, we're just coming up to IFRS 15. If we're going to do something, we need to move quickly. I think unless we do something very narrow in scope and precise and surgical, there's a real risk we'll be here for some time, and I'd like to get something out very quickly to fix this.
Okay, thank you. Bertrand?
Yeah, just a remark, effectively, currently in paragraph 68 of IS 37, the second sentence of the paragraph is just already dealing with an available cost and precising, maybe not enough, an available cost. So maybe it would just be an addition to the existing second sentence that is already precising only one side of the elements.
Okay, so Young-soo, you want to come in again?
Oh, yes. I just want to propose a two-step process. You know, we know that we need to consider both sides, cost and benefit. But many people just said that considering benefit side is going to take too much time. Then we can take two-step process. In the first step, we can concentrate on the cost first. And as soon as we finish the first project, the cost side, we can go to the second part, the benefit side. So I propose a two-step process. First step, cost first. Second step, benefit as a second step.
Okay, thank you. I think what I'm going to do, a variety of views, but what I think I will do is the easy option first, which is just to call a question based on the staff recommendation. I can read it. And if that's not successful, then I'll come back again. So the question is whether you support the staff's recommendation, which is that we focus only on clarifying the term unavoidable costs in the 37 definition.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Thank you.
So we discussed the form of any potential standard setting in paragraphs 51 to 59 of the paper. For the reasons set out in paragraph 56, we think that a narrow scope amendment to IS 37 would be the most appropriate form of standard setting for a project of this scope. In question 4 for the committee, on page 16 of the paper, we ask whether the committee agrees with our recommendation.
Bob.
I wonder if we need to answer this question or if it's too early, because not knowing where we're going or what's it going to look like, I could see a situation where what we come out with would look more like an interpretation than an amendment. And so I'd rather be open as to let's see where we go before answering what we're going to issue.
Doesn't sound unreasonable, but because I want to stay friends with the staff, it doesn't create any problems for you guys if you don't know what it is you're heading for in terms of the analysis that you need to do.
Lot of this.
No. I was going to speak and then Craig or Joan delicately correct me when I say something wrong. I suppose off the cuff, I don't think it necessarily needs to be made at this stage. So I think kind of along your lines, one of the things that sort of, I think, fed into our recommendation is maybe we were picturing, you know, to your point, Bertrand, that what, you know, the amendment or the change might look like would be some extra words that would kind of support that sentence, and therefore almost the most reader-friendly, user-friendly location might be here within 37 as opposed to separate interpretation. But I think equally, Bob, it's a fair point to say until we know exactly what the new words will entail, I don't think it affects our next step. But the other reason I say that is that we can still develop what we think outside of the form, and at least at this stage, we were expecting to use the committee to develop the new requirements. So, for example, it wouldn't make a difference to say the next step means it goes to the board or not. And I think regardless of the form, we would also be, this is one where we'd be keeping the board regularly informed in any event. But
John?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good idea to keep it open. I mean, I must admit, I don't see it as an interpretation, but I think it's a good idea to keep it open till we get further down the track.
So unless anybody objects, I propose that we follow Bob's suggestion, which is keeping it open for now. But we still need to do the final vote, do we, in terms of a formal decision on whether we're adding it to our standard setting agenda, even though we've voted all along the way?
Yes.
Yes? I just call the vote on question 5, whether you agree to add a project to the standard setting agenda.
That is
everybody. Great. Thank you. So you'll develop the thinking and that will come back to the committee to develop the next
steps.
Yes, yeah, so just to clarify, hopefully you're all okay, there is a next step piece, but obviously, so the next step in terms of, you know, developing the project further will come back to you, but in the meantime, we'll obviously report back to the board the decision today and make sure that the board is comfortable with these decisions about the scope of what it would entail.